John chapter 1, verse 35. Again, we can see clearly here that this is the place in John's narrative where we see Jesus gaining for himself the first two of his followers. And I want to begin by saying that following Jesus, that term, gets a bad rap in our culture. And what I mean by that it is becoming increasingly common for people to call themselves followers of Jesus when they aren't truly following Jesus at all. Some of them don't even know what it means. Many aren't being taught. Many aren't doing it, claiming they are. It's a popular idea to follow Jesus today, but it's not a very popular lifestyle. Certainly not the majority. I think that Christians tend to appreciate the concept of following Jesus in theory only. So following Christ, and I'm sure that you've heard the term before, and if you haven't, then just join the Christian circle for any length of time. It will be oft repeated. It's a very common phrase. So much so that I believe that it is losing some of the gravity and the intimidation that such a phrase was meant to carry. Following Christ? Ask somebody in the first century after he had died what it meant to follow Christ in his footsteps, and I think that intimidation puts it lightly. Okay, following Christ is not a pastime, guys. It's not a hobby. It is not effortless. Not everybody who says that they follow Christ is actually doing it. Let me be clear this morning when I say that following Christ is dreadful. Far less popular than it would appear. It's offensive, it's expensive, and it's lethal. Following Jesus Christ marks the end of following your heart. It marks the end of following your dreams. Following Christ means having a funeral to following your lusts or anything else that you might chase through life. I just chose three very popular ones. Following Christ is a path that's full of unbending demands. And it is something that cannot be tailored to suit your preferences as much as we'd like to believe it is. Following Christ is a rigid, one-size-fits-all lifestyle that you either wear with honor or you throw away in disgust. There is no following Christ and another master at the same time. The Christ some follow made that very clear. Following Christ is a life sentence, which is why most people choose to admire Jesus from afar than to follow him up close, and that's a fact. I think the main reason on that one is because they're too reluctant to leave everything behind in order to follow the one they claim to be Lord. What ends up happening to them in the end, and this may be offensive, but I'll say it nonetheless, they'll end up living mediocre lives as mediocre Christians who teach mediocrity to the next generation through their children. And they are going to leave the world in a worse condition than it was before they were born. They're not salt, and they're not light, as they were meant to be as followers of Christ. Only by following Jesus the way he was meant to be followed, only by doing it the way he says, will you ever live the abundant life that he promised to those who trust him and follow him. Most simply won't. Some will. Today we meet two of them. Well, Lord, as we dig in now, my prayer is that this will stir us and that we will see ourselves here in the truth, in light of your word, and that we would, I pray that we would respond. Verse 35 says, again, the next day, John stood with two of his disciples. John stood with two of his disciples. Okay? That's where the scene this morning begins. A picture of a very godly individual standing there with two of his students. That's what disciples means. They're standing there. I find that significant. You know why? Because John the Baptist, as a dynamic man of God, and as respectable as he is, and as godly and pure and holy and on fire for the Lord as he was, his ministry could only take people so far. And apparently they had reached the end of the road, so there they stood. They had nowhere to go from here unless Jesus took them further. The scene opens with these individuals just standing there. It was the point of John's ministry, was to bring people as far as they could without Christ and then transition them safely into the care of Christ. But these two disciples, there was so much more for them. So much more beyond John's ministry. So much more that this man, as great as he was, could never provide for them. And so for these guys, decision time. John can't take you any further. What are you going to do with your life? I think the same could be said of any ministry. Certainly of mine. I can only take you so far. I can do my best to bring you as far as I possibly can, but there's going to be a stopping point. I can't make you follow Jesus. Right now, to some extent, aside of the visitors this morning, you guys are my disciples. If you don't like that, I don't get why you're here. You are. You're my students. It's my teaching that you hear. It is, I hope, my teaching that you adhere to. It is my teaching that is prepping you for the day that I hand you off to Jesus to see where he takes you from here. But my ministry to you only goes so far. And I'll say this in passing. If you can't keep pace with me in this ministry, then what makes you think you're going to follow Jesus? Because I will tell you here, and this is very clear, mine's a lot easier than his. Okay? If you think it's hard to follow me, and it's hard to keep pace with what I ask of you, oh my, you got something else around the corner. If you plan to follow Christ, you will see very quickly that what he requires of a person is far beyond what I would ever require. I haven't asked you to die yet. I didn't ask you to hate mom and dad. I'm not asking you to carry any cross. I'm not asking you to, you know, leave everything. I do ask for some things. I do ask for time. I do ask for sacrifice, but not to the extent that Jesus is going to. And not only is my ministry only able to take you so far, my ministry, I believe the same could be said of anything that you spend your time pursuing. Anything. Your education, students, can only take you so far. Your career, you can only chase that for so long. Anything that you pursue in life outside of Christ has a natural stopping point. And once you reach it, whatever that is, you'll find yourself, like John and these two disciples, standing there. Jesus Christ is more than capable of taking you further than anything else in this life. But if you won't follow him, and some of you simply won't, I hate to say it, but it's statistically true in a group this size, because you know that following him might require you to walk away from what you're currently pursuing, you're going to reach a stopping point one day, and you'll be left standing there doing not very much in life. Nothing that counts for anything significant, nothing that counts for anything eternal. Because like it or not, these two disciples of John, they can't both stand there and follow Jesus at the same time, can they? Neither can you. Are you going nowhere in life? Chasing things to their logical end and then standing there wondering what comes next? I would suggest that you choose now. to follow Christ because he will take you further. You know that. We all know that. We're just afraid of where he's going to take us. Now, here's what these two men, we will find out later, and actually we covered that last week just briefly. We know that one of them's named Andrew. Every commentary that I read says that the other guy that didn't get mentioned is John, the author of the book. He's too humble to say his own name throughout the whole book. You'll find that he refers to himself as the disciple Jesus loved. He never says his name. Now, I don't know if that's humble or arrogant, but, you know, I'm the disciple that he loved. But whoever these two are, John and the other one, here's what these two men would have done if they were anything like a lot of people I meet today. They would have stayed there right next to John and let Jesus pass them by. Because standing by John was familiar, and it was comfortable, and it was safe, and it was predictable, and it was far less controversial, and it still gave every appearance of being right and holy. And they would have stayed there, convincing themselves that they were following Jesus in their heart. You don't follow Jesus in your heart. That might have a nice ring to it, but it doesn't fly. These guys could have said, well, we follow Jesus in our heart, which would have sounded okay, but there wouldn't have been anything tangible in their life that actually suggested they were following Christ. And I know what they would have done next, most likely, in order to compensate for the lack of proof that their life should have been producing. They probably would have been really extra, ultra committed to being good followers of John. I'll just try harder in following John in order to compensate. Makes me wonder, and I'm not trying to attack anybody here, but if this is a little too raw for you, my apologies, but this makes me wonder if there's anybody here that are only really good at following Justin as a cover because you're not actually following Christ. It doesn't count as following Christ just because you're good at following someone or something else. I have no complaints. I think you guys are great. Honestly, I couldn't ask for a better church. As small as this one was, we get a lot done. We have a lot of opportunity. I mean, if you're unfamiliar with how we do things here, from my perspective, I think we're killing it. But that doesn't mean you're following Christ. It means you're following Justin. But if I could say anything this morning, don't sell yourself short by following me and me only. And I say it doesn't count as following Christ just because you're good at following someone or something else. Because I think a lot of people refusing to follow Christ will just be really good at something else. So let me be clear here, students. If God has invited you to follow him, and that requires you to rethink your academic pursuits, I'm not saying it has. I'm only saying that I've seen it happen. And that I wouldn't put it past Jesus to rearrange your academic pursuits. If he's told you to do that, or he's told you to remain single, or he's told you to max sacrifices that adversely affect your family, don't lie to yourself thinking that he's overlooked that disobedience because you're putting family first or because you're pursuing a really, really, really godly man or a really godly woman or because you're a stellar Christian employee. If you're not following Christ, you're not following Christ. That's not following Christ. At best, it's following John or Justin or somebody else who, again, is just standing there going nowhere. can't follow Christ and love the world at the same time. Okay, no one gets to have their cake and eat it too. You've heard that phrase before. If there's nothing of value in the rearview mirror of your life that you left behind when the call of Christ came, it'd be safer to assume that you're not following him than to assume that you are. Because I believe that when Christ comes, he's going to call you to leave behind a few things that you just don't want to let go of. That's part of the nature of having lived as long as we did outside of the will of God when the call came. Right? You spent 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40 years locking in for yourself the life that you and your flesh wanted. And then Jesus showed up at a really inconvenient time and told you that that life that you're living is incompatible with the life I'm calling you to, so this has to go and that has to go, and then we'll work on the rest later. But you let go of these and follow me, and then we'll take care of things as we go along. You don't think he does that? Then I don't know what Bible you're reading, because mine is very clear here. These disciples had to drop everything and walk after Christ. We know when we combine the other gospels that they left jobs, lucrative jobs, family businesses. They left family. James and John walked away from dad, left him in the boat. You think dad was happy about that? Family business, boys. I've been training you since you were, you know, like 2 and a half. You're supposed to take this over. I got to sell the franchise? Zebedee Fishing just goes to some joker, right? Didn't sweat, didn't bleed, didn't. This was your great, 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 great grandfather's business. We forget that sometimes. Following Jesus costs everything. Luke 14:33, Jesus makes it clear, any one of you who doesn't renounce all that he has can't be my disciple. And again, disciple just means student. You don't even get to be a student. He goes, you know why? Because there's so much to be learned by leaving everything behind in order to follow him that will not be learned if you don't leave it behind. Impossible. So he's basically saying, unless you do it like this, and I know it sounds hardcore, but Jesus is pretty hardcore. If you don't do it like this, you ain't going to learn nothing. So now you're relegated to a life of empty religion where you sit in church week after week and learn stuff. Like, you know, you got your notebook, you take notes because, oh, there, that was insightful. Oh, okay, I didn't. Oh, that's cool. That's it. That's all you get. Just some academic head knowledge. Some, like, you know, oh, that was kind of, you know, interesting or boring or whatever it was to you. And Jesus goes, your learning is shallow. Oh, no, but I'm taking Hebrew classes. So, you know, I know. Yeah, your learning is shallow. But I got Hebrew and Greek and Aramaic. I know it all. And I've studied the text and I memorized it from cover to cover. Memorized. Forwards and backwards. So, and yep, shallow. Absolutely shallow. Because so much is to be learned in the obeying. So much is to be learned in the sacrifice which accompanies the following of Christ. So John sees Jesus as Jesus is walking by in verse 36. And he says, behold the Lamb of God. And you notice the exclamation point there. So I think he's just jacked about this. And he's like, there he is, which is what he's already said. I mean, this is just his kind of deal. Every time Jesus is near, he's like, that's Jesus. Do you recognize him? Which is partly my job, is to help you recognize Jesus when he's right in front of your face. So if that's part of my job, then let me just say, Jesus might just be right in front of your face this morning. Do you recognize him? Do you get that he's calling you? Do you get that this is for you? No accident that you're here to hear this. What made you show up today? God, so that you could hear this. He's passing by you. He's inviting you. My job is the same as John's. There he is. That's him. The two disciples heard him speak and they followed Jesus. Now, this is a pivotal moment in the life of a couple of regular Joes. These two disciples, not Joe, but Andrew and John. Like, But the emphasis here is on regular. They're just regular guys. Just regular people, just like you once upon a time. Standing around, not doing too much, Jesus showed up and created an extremely pivotal moment. And these guys listened to what their spiritual mentor just said to them and acted on it. This is their chance. This is their chance, chance of a lifetime, and they knew it. Take it or leave it. Follow Jesus right now, or just stand there for the rest of your life. Decide now. Good for a limited time. There he is. There he is. There he is. There he is. Now he's gone. Jesus isn't just standing around. He's always going somewhere. You can either follow him wherever he takes you, or you can be passed on by. Those are your choices. There's not a third choice. There's only two. Follow him or stand there. These two individuals made the choice to follow Jesus Christ, and it changed their life forever. Here's how. Here's how. We know that one of them is for sure Andrew. Not sure about the other guy, but let's just trace Andrew. Andrew was one of them. He was first a fisherman, and then a bivocational fisherman slash disciple of John, if you want to put it that way. And then a full-time disciple of Christ, and then an apostle. This guy becomes a game changer in the realm of world history. Andrew is going to follow Christ for the next 3 or so years. He's going to witness outrageous displays of power and glory right in front of his face. He's going to be given a front row seat to the unfolding of Christian history at its birth. He's going to be part of the establishment of the Church of God in its genesis. He's enabled by the Lord to go beyond anything he ever would have done on his own. He's on the verge of living a life where he preaches the gospel and changes the lives of other people, including the life of his brother, which doesn't happen, but a couple verses later, he's already on it. I mean, think about this. Without Andrew, we have no Apostle Peter. His passion to bring people to Jesus Christ is going to eventually lead him well beyond the borders of Judea, where church history says that he's going to be crucified on an X-shaped cross in Greece. And by the way, the story doesn't end when he dies. There's more to his story. The New Jerusalem, if you don't know, the Bible says is going to be built on 12 foundations. One of those has Andrew's name engraved on it. While he sits on a throne reserved just for him, so that he can serve as a judge in God's court. Now, I don't know what that stuff means, but it sounds very prestigious. And if Andrew doesn't follow Jesus right here, right now, you can erase what I just said. All of it. Because if he doesn't jump on the opportunity to follow Christ when he has it, when the opportunity is given, then Jesus finds somebody else and Andrew keeps catching fish. The end. And nothing's changed in 2,000 years, guys. Same invitation, same potential. Okay, you're probably not going to get your name engraved on a foundation stone of the New Jerusalem, but I can assure you that whatever lies in store for those who follow Christ is significant. And they followed Jesus, it says. And they followed Jesus. I want you to notice something here. John the Baptist, he didn't have to twist their arm to do it. Like, John's ministry wasn't like pushing a dead automobile uphill. You're like,
you got to get these guys to serve the Lord or something. Come on, like, where are you going? Oh, no, he's right there. No, come on.
He just went, look, there's Jesus. And he went, okay. I could say more, but I also want to point out that the two of them left simultaneously to follow Christ. They followed Jesus together, and they were the first ones to follow Jesus. You know what that says to me? No one has ever, ever, ever followed Jesus alone. It's never happened. Christian discipleship has never, never been an individual experience. From the very start, it was meant to be done with others. No one in church history has ever done it alone. The first two went together. Nobody follows Jesus who does it by themselves. We're in this together, guys. I don't want to go alone. I don't know where we're going. You don't either? Yeah, well, join the club. Let's go. Bit scary? Mm-hmm. It's never good to be afraid by yourself. You want others to join the fear. Now, did they know what they were getting into? Part of me wants to go, no, they had no idea. But I don't think that's entirely true. I think the answer to that is yes and no. I think they knew that following Jesus would come at a price. Following John had its own requirements, and so there was, in a certain way, John was prepping them to just become a person who's willing to make sacrifice, so that when Jesus showed up, it was no big deal to drop the job or to drop, you know, the family and to go. But did they know the full of it? Absolutely not. They didn't know what it was going to cost them in the end. See, because at this point in Jesus' ministry, he has yet to make any of his famous carry your cross and hate your life statements. They didn't know that that was required yet. They were just following him, perhaps curiosity. Eventually, these guys are going to learn that the cost to keep following Jesus increases all the time as you go along, doesn't it? Doesn't it? Okay. Then you know. And don't look back and go, yes, keeps increasing. Look ahead and realize it's only going to become more demanding. Like John, I'm trying to prep you for what you can expect as you follow Christ. Because if this catches you off guard, you're going to go, well, I didn't know it was going to be this hard. Your pastor told you it's going to get crazy hard. If you need consolation, just know that Jesus is probably not going to require you at the beginning of your journey what he'll require of you at the end. So just settle down and don't, you're going to run screaming. Ah, I don't want this then. No, it's incremental. I think on the contrary, these guys, as they began their journey with Christ, they also knew that to follow Christ would guarantee a certain level of excitement, and that to truly follow Christ would carry its own unique incentives and rewards, which it does. And again, they don't know the half of it. They had no idea that there would be a new Jerusalem with their name engraved on it at this point. They didn't know that they were going to sit on thrones and judge Israel. I don't think we understand, nor do I believe we're meant to understand the fullness of what it means to follow Christ. I think he keeps some of that hidden on purpose for two reasons. If he told you all the glory that was in store for you, you'd be following him for what you could get out of him, not for who he is. And if he told you all of the guts that would be spilled because you follow Jesus, you'd run screaming. He'd never have you. That's why he says, come and see. Where are you going, teacher? Come and see. Hey, we want to tag along too. Where are you going? Because we want to know if it's dangerous first. Or we want to know if there's anything in it for us. Where are you going? Because we're just kind of like evaluating whether we should leave John or... And Jesus just says, come and see. You want to know where this life's going to take you? Come on. I can tell you it'll be crazy. You mark my words. It'll be exciting. You won't be bored. We'll put it that way. So Jesus, in verse 38, turns around. He sees him following there. And he says, what do you seek? What do you want? What are you following me for? Hey, now, I want to just say this. It's not in my notes, so every once in a while I just ad lib. He didn't turn around and go, ah, I have followers. This is awesome. Jesus wasn't in competition against John to get more people for himself. Jesus wasn't trying to draw them in with all kinds of gimmicks. And the gimmicks that some churches use nowadays are ridiculous. In fact, he turns around and asks them why they're doing this. Most people aren't going to get far along the path of following Christ before Jesus stops to question their motives. He wants to know why you're following him, and he has every right to know why you're following him. And people follow Jesus for all kinds of reasons, and he's well aware of that. He was followed by the Pharisees. He could never peel himself away from the Pharisees. It was like, there they are again, you know, they're going through a grain field, and then they just pop out of the weeds, you know, like, what do they do? Rubbing their, they can't, that's work. The Pharisees followed him out of jealousy and hatred. The multitudes followed Jesus out of selfish gain. And he called them on it. We'll see that in John chapter 6. Oh, you're just after me because you got free food yesterday. And free health care the day before that. Free education all along the way. So following Jesus doesn't automatically mean that you're a good guy. And I'll tell you this, it's just as much the business of the church to find out why you're here as it is Jesus' job to find out why they're following him at the end of chapter 1. Did you know that? This church is designed to find out why you're here. Do you follow Christ for the right reasons? We'll find out in time. Do you truly love him? Are you pursuing Christ for the company that you can find in him? Or do you just want something else? You want a more comfortable life? Is that why you're checking out church? You'll be gone tomorrow. Are you here because you want to feel important? You want to kind of climb the ladder or see what you can do for Jesus? Well, you'll be gone in a month or two, I would guess. Are you here because you assume that Jesus is going to give you whatever you want in trade for a few years of devoted service and a really good church performance? People follow Jesus for all kinds of reasons, guys. But you notice, he says, what do you want? And the first word out of their mouth is rabbi. Teacher. The word means great one. Why are you here? What are you after? You. Great one. We're not after anything that you would offer us. We just want more of you. If all you want in life is more of Christ, that's what he's offering. You want a fuller understanding of His grace? You want a deeper fellowship with the Lord? You want legitimate relational interchange with the Creator of the universe? You want a real, real relationship, something more than religion? Well, then listen to me. Then I could predict what we'll see out of you. You will become a person who is willing to make any and any, every sacrifice needed in order to follow Him. Because sacrifice is where He's found. You'll tolerate the greatest pain, the greatest insults, the greatest mockery, you'll endure reproach, because that's where Jesus is found. He's found in pain. He's found in sacrifice. He's found in suffering. So, Rabbi, where are you staying? Where are you staying? First question out of their mouth. They want to know where He's staying. Seems clear to me that these guys are interested in more than just following Him around for a while. They want to know where He's staying. And they want to stay where He is. They want to live life with Him. Where are you staying so that we can go there with you? They don't expect Jesus to accommodate their schedule and accommodate their interests and accommodate their obligations. There's a lot of people don't realize they're doing that, but they're trying to make Jesus followers of them. Not, hey, Jesus, where are you staying? But Jesus, just so you know, this is where I'm staying. So if you want me to follow you, then you'll have to be where I am. I've got this going on. I've got this going on. I'm busy here. I've got this, and this is my schedule. And so see if you can't fit yourself in somewhere between, you know, like 9 and 9:30 on Wednesday morning. Not these guys. Where are you staying? They intend to arrange their entire life around His whereabouts. That's what true followers of Christ gladly do. You know why? Because they're not after what He'll give them or what they can keep, but rather who He is. Where are you staying so I can go there? And Jesus leaves him with this. Come and see. The only one who knows where he's going is him. Nobody else has a clue. And yet he invites you to come with. That'll make you squirrely if you're kind of one of those people that needs a plan. Well, I need to know where you're going, Christ, to see if my life kind of fits it. Hey, listen, don't bother. I can tell you it doesn't. It just doesn't. I've said this before, but it's worth saying again here. If your life looks no different since you've begun, quote, following Christ, than it did before you were following Christ, then apparently you were by accident following him all along and just didn't know it. Stuff's going to change. You want to follow Christ, you brace yourself because things are going to change. You go, well, what do you mean? I don't know. Find out. Come and see. He's not going to tell you where he's taking you, but I can guarantee you this. If you'll follow him, he'll take you somewhere. He ain't standing around. Do you want to go somewhere in life? Do you want this to count for something? Then come and see where Christ has taken us. Come and see where Christ has taken us. Father, we come to you and ask that you would make us well aware of when Christ is venturing past our life, right before our eyes, lest we miss it. And when it becomes clear that he is, May we take a deep breath and jump in with both feet. Because if we pass, we have no idea what we're missing. And I have to wonder if those who do pass will ever have to endure sitting at the judgment throne of God as he makes them aware of what their life could have been had they lived with faith. Because how God awful would that be to have in the end settled for mediocrity when such glory was offered only to find out after it's too late that glory that was being held out to us when the invitation was made. When Christ comes, may we follow, not needing to see where we're going, but trusting Christ that wherever it is, will be wonderful.